Aya Women Podcast, the source of her sport.
Welcome. It is the Aya Women Podcast. I am Matt Kinnear, here with Hallie Quillenin. We are shipping up to Boston. Hallie is already there in Boston. The rest of us are coming to join her for the NCAA Championship weekend. And what a group of four teams that we have here going to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Massachusetts. A surprising quarterfinal weekend. Really exciting action led to this group. Hallie, looking back at last weekend, this was just a crazy weekend. It kind of continued the trend of the whole season. But what do you make of this group of teams that have made it to the biggest stage in the sport?
Surprising. I think that's really the theme of the weekend. There's certainly a few different things that you can look at. But it's funny, Dave Vatz, I think after Penn State beat Princeton on Sunday, he sent me a text message like, Penn State, Maryland, BC, and Navy, we called that, right? And it, obviously joking, because I don't think there's a lacrosse fan out there that called this particular bracket, which is exciting because I'm seeing shades of what the men's game has seen in the last 4 or 5 years that I've been at inside the cross now in the women's game, and that there's a lot of new teams involved. You know, certainly Penn State, historically one of the most dominant women's lacrosse programs, but really have gone up and down. And since Missy Doherty took over, they've been on such a strong upward trend. So it's nice to see the Nittany Lions make their second straight appearance in the Final Four. Maryland, you know, what more can you say about the Terps? They've been there more often than any other program in the country. They're certainly Goliath, and they know it. And then, you know, you flip into the second semifinal, Boston College and Navy. This is the exciting matchup to me. Both of these teams are unseeded. Both of these teams have gone through multiple seeded opponents to make their way to championship weekend, of which this is the first time that both BC and Navy have made their way to the Final Four, which, of course, leads the way to Sunday. I'm excited to see a brand new team in Championship Sunday. You know, I don't think that we've seen a new team since Syracuse made it there in 2012, so it's certainly been a while. I'm excited to see the excitement that the Navy and BC, and yes, I think you'll see a little bit about that with Penn State too, that these players approach this weekend. You know, I think for a team like Maryland, for teams like UNC and Syracuse that have certainly kind of become accustomed to playing in Memorial Day weekend, you almost see this blinders on. Well, of course we're here. I always get excited to see, come practices tomorrow at Gillette, what the newcomers approach it with.
And you will be there at those practices. You will be on the sidelines all weekend with the broadcast. And Hallie, Navy beating North Carolina. I mean, you know, I remember tweeting out from one of our accounts that, you know, the mids mean business. What have you seen from them particularly? You know, obviously they have a legendary coach at the helm who is going to be a huge storyline this weekend given the teams that are around her. But what have you seen from Navy? I mean, obviously they've had, you know, big win after big win, program-defining win, but they just keep going. And now they're at the sport's biggest stage.
You know, Navy, Cindy Timchill is the story of the weekend. She returns to the Final Four where, of course, she won multiple national championships with Maryland. She started that Maryland reign. And it's nice to see her return with a new team. And it's also nice to see her return alongside, these three other head coaches all played for Cindy at Maryland and won national championships under Timchill there. So it's really nice to see the overarching Maryland story. And then when you look at this Navy team, you know, this was a team that needed a Patriot League conference championship to advance into the NCAA tournament. They did not really put themselves into a regular season position to receive an at-large bid. So if you think of the distance that they've gone, it's remarkable. And I think that really started with their win over Loyola in the Patriot League Championship. You know, it was a dominant, I want to say 10-goal win. And the way that Navy just has played, you know, the Collins sisters, their stars, Kelly Larkin, you know, she very well could be this year's Rookie of the Year with the postseason that she's put together. She's a three-time IL Women Rookie of the Week, and it's come the last 3 weeks. You know, her NCAA appearance in her freshman season, I'm not sure if any other player in the history of the game has had the freshman NCAA performances that Kelly Larkin has had back-to-back-to-back here. I love the way that this team came out guns blazing against North Carolina. I think to play a reigning national champ, a team that's there every year, you know, when you see North Carolina across the chest of your opponent, I think that there quite often can be some nerves, you know, that can put you on your heels alone. And I love the way that the Mids came out fighting from the opening whistle. You know, they held the lead at the half, 8-7. They outscored UNC in the second half, 8-7, to take that 16-14 win. And, you know, you look at what they did. They hung with North Carolina on the draw controls. I think that's going to be huge for Navy this weekend, is their success on the draw. I mean, they were going up against an IL first-team All-American on the draw, and that was, of course, Sammy Jo Tracy. And they all but neutralized her, you know, to just fall behind North Carolina by three possessions off the draw control. I think that was Navy's key in this game. You know, they were right there with shots. You know, they went shot for shot with North Carolina. Navy's goalie, Ingrid Boyum, just did a great job in net. You know, they put together a complete game against one of the most complete teams in the country. I think that Navy heading into this game, you know, last time out against Boston College, they got blown out of the water. But they're a very different team than they were then. Navy knows it, and I think BC knows it too.
And I know you've talked with Coach Cindy Timshaw, you know, quite a few times this year, but obviously she's going to be the focal point of a lot of attention, you know, with her ties to every program in this Final Four. It just shows a lot about her legendary stature in the game. Hallie, you've talked with her. What's the vibe you get from her heading into this weekend?
Business as usual. You know, Cindy's just so funny when you interview her. You know, I think that the lacrosse world is very surprised that Navy is in the Final Four. Of course, because they're the new kid on the block. They haven't been there before. Of course, there's an element of surprise when any unseeded team makes it to the Final Four. But for Navy, you know, you talk to Cindy and there's no surprise there. You know, she said, my team's been playing good lacrosse. We've been playing great lacrosse down the stretch. She thinks it started in that Patriot League championship game. And she is certainly no stranger to championship weekends. She's played in more of these championship weekends on the sidelines than most other coaches could ever dream of. So I think that confidence at their helm has Navy playing very strong lacrosse right now. And you look who their offensive coordinator is. And you know, I spoke with Cindy this morning. I said, you know, of your six leading scorers, five of them have double-digit assists. You know, this is a team that distributes the ball, works together. I said, can you credit that to Allie Messenger? And she said, oh, 100%, that's all Allie. I think that Allie Messenger has certainly put herself on the map in her first year as an assistant coach, that she might be one of the nation's brightest stars in that offensive coordinator position. And, you know, you look at what she brings to the table to this Navy offense. She was the NCAA tournament's most outstanding player last year. She won a national championship with North Carolina. So while I think this Navy team is void of that championship experience, their leaders have it in spades, which I think that they can take solace in.
Boston College, I feel like this was a team that you've been keyed on for a while, kind of before they've emerged here into this Final Four picture. Last three games, 21 goals, 21 goals, and then 20 goals. Clearly, this is a team playing its best lacrosse at the very best time of the year.
Yeah, Boston College. You know, this is a team that put up 20 goals once earlier in the season, and ironically, that was over Navy. And then in their three NCAA tournament games, you know, they're averaging over 20 goals a game. So I asked Coach Walker, I said, you know, what's the difference? What has this offense been doing of late? And she said, you know, I'm not going to give you anything juicy here because I do sound so generic, but they're just playing so well together. They're so unselfish. They're sharing the ball. She's like, it's amazing what an offense can do when you have seven threats on the offense that can, one, score at will, and two, want to make each other look better. And, you know, that's really been the Eagles' theme ever since, you know, Kenzie Kent has joined this team. You know, you look at the scoring, of course, Sam Apuzzo, a threat in and of herself, 111 points. She's an All-American. You know, Kate Weeks, I think, is one of those underrated attackers, and it's kind of crazy that you can be an underrated attacker and put up 98 points on the year. But I think it's because Apuzzo and Kenzie Kent are such big names. And Kenzie, you know, she joins this team halfway through the season. She already has 60-plus points on the year. You know, you look at what BC has done this year. They're 16-6, but from April 1st on, they only have two losses. And she credits that April 1st game, you know, that Virginia game, as the turning point. That 17-10 win over the Cavaliers, of course, they followed that up with a couple of disappointing losses, Duke, North Carolina. But she says that her team's really learned a lot since that Virginia game, the ups and downs, and they're playing their best lacrosse right now. And, you know, you look at Kenzie Kent, every single year that she's joined this team post-hockey season, it has not been a healthy Boston College team. You know, her freshman year, she joined Sarah Manley, Covey Stanwyck, Michaela Ricks, but right before Kenzie Kent joins, Michaela Ricks goes down with a season-ending ACL tear. Kenzie Kent's sophomore year, Sam Apuzzo's in the mix. She comes in. She's in the running for National Rookie of the Year. Right before Kenzie Kent joins, Sam Apuzzo goes down with an ACL tear. So this is really the first time that Kenzie Kent has joined an already healthy and lethal Boston College team. So I love the way all of these girls are playing together. I like the versatility and the athleticism of their defense. You know, you play players like Dempsey Arsenal, Brooke Troy, Christina Walsh. They're such athletic midfielders turned defenders, which I think helps BC. You know, this is going to be a high-scoring game. I think the strength of both Navy and BC is, you know, nothing against their defense. They both have great defenses that have got them here, but it's their offense. They put up big numbers. They have all NCAA tournament. I think that this is going to be a barn burner, which, of course, for ESPN and for the viewers' purpose, that's the exciting brand of lacrosse to watch.
The last game of this past weekend was an exciting one, too. A tight contest. Penn State, though, overcoming Princeton, winning 14-12, punching its second straight ticket to the NCAA Final Four. You know, when you look at this field of teams, you know, Penn State was certainly, along with Maryland, you know, one of the teams that was maybe at the beginning of the year, you thought a little more might be in the mix this time of year, and they've kept it going all season. Hallie, Penn State, you know, was a highly ranked team coming into this season. They've kept it going. They're here at Final Four weekend. What do you see out of the Nittany Lions?
You know, you saw the 2016 Cinderella team of the NCAA tournament follow it up, back it up in 2017. You know, this is a team that got into the NCAAs last year with an at-large bid. You know, they went down, they beat Florida, kind of shocked the lacrosse world there with that one-goal win, beat Penn, another ranked team, en route to almost beating the reigning national champ, which was North Carolina. You know, they only lost to North Carolina by a goal last year in the semifinal. And I think after the moves that they made in the NCAA tournament and having that bitter taste, you know, a taste of knowing a few less turnovers, a few better shot decisions, and Penn State punching its ticket to the NCAA tournament, you know, what better motivation to approach your 2017 season with? And I think that Penn State, you know, their best players from a season ago, certainly they're a year older, a year wiser. They have another year of playing together. Steph Lazo, Madison Carter, Katie O'Donnell, you know, those are names that are now synonymous with Penn State lacrosse. And in my opinion, they're really the biggest three-headed monster of the weekend heading into the Final Four. I don't think that any other team possesses a top three that pack quite the punch that these three do when they're all playing their best lacrosse at the same time. You know, they play a team they're very familiar with. You know, they played Maryland earlier in the year. Of course, that loss to Northwestern in the Big Ten tournament means they did not advance to play Maryland in the Big Ten championship. But, you know, they know each other. They know each other in and out. They play each other quite often. This game is going to be an exciting one. But, you know, I think that Penn State will have to put together their best performance to beat Maryland. And I think that that's something they're certainly capable of. You know, you look at this Princeton game. This was really the only game that kind of held true. You know, the 4 seed taking on the 5 seed, you knew it was going to be a battle. Of course, Penn State beat Princeton earlier in the year, but that result was kind of thrown out the window. You know, Penn State led narrowly at the half. They outscored Princeton 6-5. They led narrowly in the second half, outscoring Princeton 8-7 for a 14-12 win. You know, Princeton elected to face guard Steph Lazo, which was huge. And I think a lot of teams do that. You know, they face guard Steph because she's just such a facilitator for the team. I mean, you look at the point production of Penn State this year, and she has 45 goals, 42 assists. You know, the next highest assisting player for this Penn State team has 16 assists, and that's Maggie Gallagher. So Penn State plays its best lacrosse, and the ball goes through Lazo's stick. The fact that Penn State was able to survive in advance with Steph Lazo head to zero. Yeah, she didn't have a point. She didn't have a shot in this game. You know, that tells me that Missy Doherty was very comfortable pulling Steph out and letting her six go 66 against Princeton. You saw Katie O'Donnell had a hat trick. Madison Carter, you know, she had 3 goals and 12 draw controls. You know, I think that she's going to be a huge X factor on the draw versus Callie Harshorn. And then you saw freshman Maria Off. She's the Iowa Women Rookie of the Week. She had 5 points to leave the field. She had 4 goals and an assist. That was her first career start. So I think that they probably knew Princeton might come out and elect to face guard Lazo, giving Off that look. I think that this is a team that, when it plays its best lacrosse, can beat everyone. And they were so close to beating Maryland in the regular season, putting together a near perfect game. It'll be interested to see what they do. And of course, I'm going to turn the table on you here. I was not at the Maryland Stony Brook game. You were. So, you know, why don't you tell us all a little bit about what you saw and ultimately why the Terps prevailed?
I mean, clearly, I think anyone thinks that this game should have been played at championship weekend, potentially the national championship game. It was two powerhouses going at it. Maryland came back and won 13-12. You know, a few takeaways from this game is, you know, I remember at a point where Stony Brook went up 11-7, and I posted on my Twitter account, that feels like a deflating goal where, you know, you just felt the energy sucked out of the crowd there at Maryland. You really thought that Stony Brook, from that point on, would just be able to kind of hold on to the lead and win by, you know, 1 or 2 goals. But then Maryland called a timeout, and you can just see the poise, the leadership, the coaching, everything that you know about Maryland lacrosse really came out, you know, in that end of the game there where Maryland kind of went on its run and ended up winning 13-12. Just really impressed by the leadership. Obviously, it starts with Coach Kathy Reese. You know, she never got overly emotional on the sideline. You know, it was kind of business as usual. For a team that doesn't really go down, you know, I've seen teams that have been favorites that have, you know, gone undefeated throughout the season, and the time that they face some adversity, they just fold because they're not used to what it takes to play from behind, you know, the composure that you need to keep to do that. And Maryland had it. And, you know, Zoe Stukenberg really was the person who, you know, obviously she's a Tuorton finalist and so many superlatives you can say about her year and more so about just kind of person that she is. I understand she's going to do some great things after college, but I was really impressed with the way that she took control of this game. You know, they had some kind of depth scoring come in there. You know, Jen Giles and Taylor Hench were two players who came up big, you know, showing the depth of this Maryland squad. But then Zoe was kind of part of it all, and she really felt like the true leader out there. On the field, the one big stat that kind of tilted in favor of Maryland were the draw controls. They really controlled the circle there. Really impressed with job, you know, from some freshmen getting some balls there and just a really key win for Maryland. And Hallie, you know, just a super impressive game. Was this a game that you could kind of, was this the level of play that you would expect at like a Final Four or championship game? Am I crazy here, or does that sound like where it should be?
No, I agree. I think that this was, it was a shame that Stony Brook received the 8th seed. I mean, I know that there was obviously a bit of a conflict with the New York State travel restrictions in terms of they could not be the 7th seed in the case that they would have to travel down to Chapel Hill. Stony Brook is the top 4 seed. I think they showed that. And I think that the NCAA committee, once again, I think USC showed that they should have been a seeded team. I think the NCAA committee, and I know, you know, these are the criteria they have to keep in mind, but, you know, RPI has so much to do with strength of schedule, how your opponents do against their opponents and win percentages. And Stony Brook and USC can't help that they have to play in their conferences. You know, you can't hold a team responsible or accountable for the fact that some of the teams in their conference might not be at the level that they are. You know, Stony Brook certainly has some, you know, big wins over a lot of teams in their conferences, USC as well, that ultimately they couldn't have scheduled a top 10, a top 15, a top 20 team in their place because they have to play those games. So I think that Stony Brook, they should have been a top 4 seed. I think USC should have been a top 8 seed. And they showed that with their ability to go and produce wins. And quite frankly, I think that the Maryland Stony Brook game should have been a semifinal, should have been a championship. I wish it were a semifinal because I wish that more people were able to get their eyes on that game on a big stage. I think that this game is one of the best games, you know, certainly the best game I've seen so far this season. And it sets Maryland up for a successful weekend, I think. You know, you talk to Kathy Reese, you talk to her after the game, and, you know, she said, my team had never been down like that and really come back. She said, you know, my team has never been down with a second half deficit like that. The last time we were was, you know, last year's North Carolina game. Certainly that didn't go the way we wanted it to go. So I think that Maryland being challenged the way they were in this quarterfinal game, it was a huge wake-up call. You know, I think it goes to show the Terps, you know, this is how quickly a game can be taken from you, and you don't just always survive in advance. But it also shows the Terps that they're capable of stepping up from a big deficit against a very talented team and arguably, you know, the top player in college across this year, and Kylie O'Miller, work together, produce goals, and produce a win. So I think that that performance for Maryland, in the back of their mind, knowing that they were capable of coming up with that, I think is a huge catapult into the semifinals. And, you know, I think we are going to see a much different matchup. You know, certainly I think it can be just as close, but I think we're going to see a much different matchup because Penn State is a very different team in the way they play lacrosse than Stony Brook.
You know, I can't say enough about the job that Kathy Reese and her leaders on this team did. You know, I know I just mentioned that for the past few minutes, but really it's extremely impressive. And like you said, a really good springboard into the Final Four. You know, I wrote about Kylie O'Miller, of just how impressive she is. And I just kind of wanted to share some more of my thoughts on that. You know, I went up to Stony Brook with our photographer, Jacqueline Borowski. We did a photo shoot with her and Courtney Murphy prior to the season. So sometime in December is when we did that. And right then, it's when I realized that she was a special person in terms of her charisma, you know, she's kind of got the whole package. You know, she's got the charisma. She's got the highlight reel goals. She's a really effective player. She loves her teammates. A lot of times when we're in that situation, you know, these are practically kids that we're working with, and it's tough to kind of interact with them sometimes. You know, they're nervous, and rightfully so, and they don't want to say the wrong thing. The coaches sometimes have the reins put on them pretty tightly not to share too much info, but I was really impressed with how she carried herself. Obviously, we've seen her all this year, breaking Jen Adams' record, all the goals that she does on SportsCenter. The way she handled herself after that press conference, you know, she was devastated from that loss, and, you know, she still had little kids coming up to her and wanting her autographs and stuff like that. So that's kind of those are the things that kind of formed my story, in which I said that, you know, she should be kind of considered the face of college lacrosse. You know, she's returning. she's the player that that has probably been seen more than any other women's player in history. When you think of this era of the viral videos and how many game times she's been on SportsCenter. So just some of my thoughts of why I wrote that piece about her and just how impressive she is. But the last thing I think we need to talk about with this game, obviously the foul discrepancy. Even if you know nothing about lacrosse, you look at this box score and that sticks out to you. You know, Stony Brook had 58 fouls. Maryland had 15 fouls. Maryland had 11 free position shots. They went 2-for-11 on those. Stony Brook had 3. Stony Brook also had 5 yellow cards. You know, to me, to put it in the most basic terms, Maryland still won. Kathy Reese did what she had to do to win this game. Her leaders stepped up. They came back from a deficit and they won. You know, this discussion about fouls says nothing about, nothing to take away from what Maryland does, but more just to highlight 58 versus 15 is a really, really stark discrepancy. I know Stony Brook is a physical team. I know that they pack it in, so they're going to get more of those three-second calls. But really, this shouldn't have been that lopsided. It should have been maybe 35-15, something like that, which is still pretty lopsided and deservedly so. But I don't know. It just slowed down the game. They didn't seem justified a lot of the times. I wasn't a fan of how this was officiated. And just looking at the bigger picture, I mean, for the quarterfinal round, with the game spread out geographically, going on at the same time, is there a way to make it so that you're just kind of certain that there's consistent refereeing, you know, across all four games that we have there?
You know, I agree with you, and I won't dive into the referee comment because I agree with what you said. You know, I will kind of take that last question that you pointed out. In order to grow this sport, in order to continue to expose the sport that is women's lacrosse, and quite frankly, I think this is the best brand of women's lacrosse that we've put forward in years because of the implementation of the possession clock. We have not seen stalling. Lacrosse is exciting. You know, I hate watching games where people are just passing it back and forth for 6, 7, 8 minutes. So the fact that you're seeing teams sitting on a one goal lead with 2 minutes left and they have to take a shot, that's exciting. That's the way that lacrosse should be played, both men's and women's. Men, if you hear that, catch on. You know, I think that I would love to see the women take a page out of the men's book and how they do their quarterfinals. Let's get two of these games played at the same location, two at another location, two played on Saturday, two played on Sunday. That way, there are no games going on at the same time. I think the best referees should be refereeing these games. They shouldn't be, you know, dispersed all over the country. In my personal opinion, I don't think the quarterfinal games should be played on a different surface than the national championship game is going to be played on. So that means if this is going to be played on AstroTurf, you're playing on AstroTurf in the quarters. If this is going to be played on grass, you're playing on grass in the quarters. You know, we're moving these athletes late in the season. They're tired. Let's think about the athlete. You're moving them from surface to surface. That has a wear and tear on a body. Let's take care of the athletes here. Let's put them all on the same surface, get them ready for what's coming in the championships, what's coming in the semifinals. And let's help ourselves in terms of viewership and putting our game forward. You know, Stony Brook, Maryland, rightfully so, it was the marquee matchup of the day, but so much so that, you know, you're watching this game in College Park, it comes to a close, you know, you turn that off and you're like, oh, right, Navy's beating North Carolina. We better turn into that game. And there's only 20 minutes of that game left. What are we doing here? You know, this is the biggest stage we're putting our sport on. This is the final 8 teams standing. We need to give respect to the 8 teams that they deserve and get as many eyes on those games as we possibly can. There are more games being streamed and being broadcasted than there ever have been. You know, in my days in college, you know, most of the games that I played in weren't streamed. So if my parents weren't there, they weren't watching. They were tuning in via the radio stations. You know, teams and universities and athletic departments and conferences have done such a great job getting this sport the access it needs to continue to grow and to continue to get on ESPN throughout the regular season and these larger broadcast networks. It makes you scratch your head a bit when it comes to the quarterfinals and, you know, the final stretch before these teams go to Gillette. Why are they playing all at the same time? You know, three of the four games were basically being played at the same time. You could not watch all three. We're not doing these girls a service.
Definitely. But, you know, overall, congrats to Maryland. They weathered that storm. You know, that was really, really impressive. I can't say that enough. And a springboard into the Final Four. Hallie, let's talk a little bit more specifically about the Final Four. We've touched on each game a little bit when we're talking about the quarterfinals. But so we have these two contests. What do you predict will happen in these two contests? And I'll start with mine. I just don't see anybody beating Maryland. I think it's a Maryland national championship, which is not exactly going out on a limb. But I just love the way that their leadership showed me so much stuff about them. They're not going to be in a situation where they're prone to an upset because they don't show up or they don't take the game seriously. This is a team that's focused and ready to go. But Hallie, if you can give me a few predictions and what you see about these games coming up.
You know, if there's a sleeper of the weekend, it's Penn State. Penn State has played Maryland very close this year. They felt like they put together a solid game plan and not their best, and they fell a couple goals shy. I think that what hurts Penn State is how well Stony Brook played against Maryland. I think that was a wake-up call, and it got Maryland into a different element of their game. Which was that mental game, that comeback game, and the ability for leaders to step up and show up. But yeah, I don't think so fast. You know, I think Penn State Maryland is going to be a good game. Penn State has deserved the credit that they have received all year long, and in that they backed it up. You know, they had a small step back in the Big Ten tournament against Northwestern that kind of made you question, you know, what was going on with Penn State. How would they put together their postseason run, and they've come back. You know, they've proven that Northwestern loss was a fluke. Credit to Kelly Monty Hiller. She's one of the best lacrosse minds that this sport has ever seen. You know, she put together a great game plan to get a must win off of Penn State to get into the tournament. But you know, I think Penn State's going to give Maryland a game. I don't think this is by any means lacrosse that Maryland's going to walk through. And then, you know, Boston College Navy, you know, I hate, you know, no disrespect to Maryland, Penn State, but I'm really excited to watch Boston College Navy just because, in my opinion, they're the stories of the weekend. They're the stories of the semifinals, both unseeded teams, both teams that have put up crazy numbers. And I think, you know, for Navy, heading into the North Carolina game, a lot of people thought, you know, this is great for Navy. You know, they have that win over Penn. They have that win over UMass. They've shown that they are capable of, you know, grabbing NCAA tournament wins, grabbing wins over ranked opponents. And then they shocked the lacrosse world and beat the reigning champs. And they beat North Carolina, a team that has beaten everybody else this season other than, you know, Maryland. So Navy's win over North Carolina certainly put, you know, me on watch and should put the rest of the lacrosse world on watch because it just shows how capable Navy is of beating any of these teams this weekend. And then you look at Boston College, I just think they're playing at a different level. I think of any player on the field that takes Gillette Stadium this weekend, Kenzie Kent is the best player. She is a player that deserves to be a Tim Wharton finalist. She is a player that deserves to be a first team All-American based on her talent alone. I don't think we'll ever see that because she only plays half a season. But the fact that she joins this team with championship mentality, you know, these BC players, they haven't played in a Final Four before. Kenzie has multiple times, and that she's played in the Frozen Four with the BC ice hockey team. I think that her leadership, her championship experience helps them. I'm excited to see what she can do alongside players like Sam Apuzzo and Kate Weeks and the talent that this BC team has.
And BC obviously has the home field thing going for it, but you know, I've seen plenty of Maryland fans travel in my day, so I would expect the Terps to show up in droves as well. Navy is the kind of Cinderella story of this tournament as well. So, and then Penn State obviously is one of the more loyal college fan bases there is. So hopefully the fans show up to Gillette and kind of make this a good experience for the student athletes. Hallie, you will be on the sidelines. How many years now have you done this at the Final Four?
This is my second year. Last year was my first year with ESPNU for the national championship. I'll be on the sideline for the semis and the championship this year. Semis will be on ESPN3 championship at 11 o'clock. So it's kind of your morning treat on Sunday before the men's D2 and D3 championships. Of course, the women's will be on ESPNU. And I'm excited to be a part of it. I am crossing my fingers that the weather cooperates.
Definitely, we all are. And so last year, you almost got drenched in a Gatorade bath at the end of that game, right, with Jenny Levy?
It was. You know, the fact that it was Gatorade, I'm kind of happy that it missed. But it was so hot on that field. I mean, credit to those athletes and the fans for coming out. It was such a hot day. I think it took, you know, the entire summer for my sunburn from Championship Sunday and Memorial Day weekend to go away. I was so hot, so it probably wouldn't have been the worst thing to get a water cooler, but Gatorade cooler, it's a little sticky. I was happy I was avoided.
Excellent, Hallie. Well, everyone, please be sure to tune in ESPN3 and ESPNU, you said, Hallie?
Yes,
ESPNU. For the championship game. Hallie will be on the sidelines doing some sideline reporting and support these athletes. If you can't make it to the game, watch them on your device or your television. And we will be back for a championship recap podcast. We will be up in Foxborough all weekend, excited to bring you the action on IL Women. You can follow me on Twitter at Matt Kinnear, KINNEAR. Follow Hallie at HR Quillenin. And then be sure to follow IL Women and Inside the Cross. We will see you up at Gillette.
IL Women Podcast, the source of her sport. We'll be right back.